Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
As technology continues to improve, weather models are becoming increasingly more accurate in the short term due to increased computing power and increased resolution. But how can we quantify the accuracy of these models? It seems like a basic question, but one that isn't so easy. Well, that's where machine learning comes in. Joining us today is Stefan Rasp to talk about WeatherBench, an open source framework that aims to help answer questions on weather accuracy and modeling. Stefan, thank you for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, we go all over the place with Weather Geeks, and this is certainly a topic that I've wanted to dove into for some time. So thank you for joining us. But before we geek out on machine learning and weather models and accuracy, the question I ask every single guest is this: how did you become a weather geek?
Sort of by chance. I definitely didn't have a big passion for weather growing up. And so out of high school, I didn't really know what to do. And I did an undergrad in geography because, you know, I thought, you know, earth science was kind of interesting. I did find that a little bit too sort of descriptive, and I was looking to go into something a little bit more quantitative, and meteorology was one of the only options. And so I just started a master's in meteorology in Munich, seeing, you know, if I liked it. And it turns out that I actually really did like it. So the program there was focused mainly on atmospheric physics, and there's a lot of really interesting physics going on in the atmosphere, so that was really cool. But what I found particularly interesting was the computational problem of numerical weather prediction. I thought that was just a super interesting science problem. You have all of these different observations that come in, and you have to then create a model forecast from it. You have to deal with sort of the intrinsic uncertainty of the system, and you're always at the limit of what's possible computationally. And I just really liked that. And so I stuck around and did a PhD. And that's how I ended up in weather.
It's a really interesting story. So, by the way, my degrees are in meteorology as well, but I'm a professor in the Department of Geography at the University of Georgia. And so I certainly resonate with your pathway. Mm-hmm. We certainly have people that go in that pathway. Let me give the listeners and viewers a bit more on your background. You got your PhD, as you mentioned, in Munich at the Ludwig Maximilian Universitat, and I hope that I got that close.
You can just say
correct.
LMU for short.
That's LMU, I think most people, yeah, so many people in our field will be familiar with LMU. He is a senior research scientist at Google since September 2022. We're going to be talking about WeatherBench 2, which is an update to the global medium range weather forecasting benchmark, which Rasp and colleagues proposed in 2020. I don't want to give too much away about, but I am curious, between that gap in 2019 and 2022 at Google, what were you up to in that 3-year period?
Yeah, I mean, so during my PhD, about halfway through, I discovered machine learning. It wasn't something I started out doing in my PhD, but around sort of, that was must have been around 2017, I heard more and more about machine learning, and I just got interested. And so I took an online course to check out what it was, and I still found it interesting, and took another online course, and I just really got hooked on it. I really loved like the fact that, you know, with pretty simple libraries and tools, you could train neural networks to do pretty cool stuff. And so then I was sort of in my second half of my PhD, I changed to doing a range of machine learning projects in weather and climate. So I have to thank my advisor for giving me a lot of freedom there. After then completing my PhD, I did a postdoc at the other university in Munich for a while, and that's where I worked on the first version of WeatherBench. So that first version was kind of a result of an early wave of machine learning papers that came out around that time that were exploring different ways of using machine learning for weather and climate problems. And there were some people that tried the brute force approach, so just saying, hey, let's take the past states of the weather and learn the machine learning model to map from the state at one point in time to the state at some future time, let's say 6 hours or 3 days later. And back then, those models really weren't particularly good. They were really coarse resolution, right? Several hundred kilometer scale. So much worse than the operational weather models. But it was an interesting approach. And so I reached out to the authors and said, hey, can we design a benchmark? And benchmarks have been very successful in the machine learning world because they sort of define a problem. They define a way of evaluating that problem and the predictions. They define a data set. And so it makes it really easy to see which method does best and track progress in a problem. And so we worked on the first version of WeatherBench then and published that. But then, honestly, for around 2 years after that, not a lot happened. And there wasn't really a big breakthrough in model skill. The models were still a lot worse than the, you know, the operational forecast models. And I kind of got discouraged. And that's why I left academia or research for a while. I joined a startup to work on more application-based, more consumer product focused areas. But then around 2 years after the publication of the first WeatherBench, I got an email from somebody I'd never heard of. His name was Ryan Kiesler, and he sent me the draft of a paper that he wrote where he used the graph neural network, which is, it's a neural network that operates on graphs rather than pixels, but we can get into the details later. And his model produced forecasts that were almost as skillful as sort of the operational weather models like the IFS or the GFS in the US, which I did not think was possible. I didn't think it was possible. And I think most people in the community didn't think it was possible. So that was a real turning point for me because it got me super excited again about getting back into research, working on that problem again. And I think that probably also applies to quite a lot of other people in the community. And then that same year later, we saw the release of a bunch of other models that rivaled, you know, even the best operational models in terms of skill in many areas. And so that's when I then joined Google. And because these models were so much better than what the original WeatherBench was designed for, we kind of wanted to update it to serve the needs of these new models, these really high resolution data-driven weather models.
Just fascinating. I'm so glad to have you. We're talking with Dr. Stefan Rasp, and you know, I want to get into so much, but I've just got so many questions that are just bubbling in my head right now. But I want to start with sort of a basic context question, because you're mentioning things like machine learning, you're mentioning neural networks. And I often, even as someone that is somewhat sort of science attentive and understands what these terms are, even I sometimes don't necessarily know the nuances of the difference between machine learning and AI. Are there any differences, or are they just sort of subsets of each other?
Well, I think these terms are used very freely these days. I think AI just describes any system that, you know, performs any machine system that performs a task or learns to perform a task. Machine learning is a subset of that technically, but most of the times they're used synonymously. So, but essentially machine learning, or what we're using, is mostly called supervised learning. You have a training data set where for every sort of input, like if we just take this right to the weather application, for every input to your model, you have a corresponding target from your training data set. So in the case of these global data-driven weather forecasting models, the input would be the state of the weather at some time. And the target, the thing that the model should predict, is the state of weather sometime in the future, let's say 6 hours. And then you show the neural network, and the neural network is essentially just a model that has lots of parameters. You show the model these predictions, the model makes a prediction, it compares it to what it should predict from your training target, And then it figures out how to adjust its parameters to produce a better prediction. And so you do this many, many, many times this step. You always adjust the parameters in little increments until you get to a lower error at the end. And so this is how, in a nutshell, how these models work and how machine learning works in that case.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Dr. Stefan Ross from Google. Whoa, did I just say a guest from Google on Weather Geeks? I surely did. So let's just keep going because there's so much. I need 2 hours for this particular episode. I don't think we have it because a lot of people, this is new material. Let me give a little context for the WeatherBench 2. You've mentioned it and so forth, but I want to read a little bit more. WeatherBench 2 consists of an open source evaluation framework, publicly available training, ground truth, and baseline data, as well as continuously updated website with latest metrics, state-of-the-art models, and so forth. The metrics are based on established practices for evaluating weather forecasts at the leading operational weather centers, such as the European Center and NOAA here in the U.S. and so forth. The group behind WeatherBench defines a set of headline sources or scores to provide an overview of model performance. So that's a real sort of 101 on WeatherBench. Now, before we go further, could you just talk about how different the approach is within WeatherBench versus, say, a standard GFS or European Center modeling framework for predicting weather?
Yeah, so, I mean, WeatherBench is really an evaluation framework. And thankfully, we didn't have to reinvent the wheel here. Evaluation is very well established across weather centers, and so invent anything new. We just made these standard verification metrics that are used across at NOAA or at ESMWF accessible for the machine learning community, and provided the data so that everyone can, in a reproducible way, evaluate the models that they train and compare them in an apples to apples fashion. And so there's an evaluation framework, there's code where everyone can run the same evaluation so you know that what you get in the end is what you should get. There's data that's freely available on the cloud so that everybody can evaluate against the same data or even train with the same data. And then there's a website where we try to get as many of the state-of-the-art models, so both the traditional physics-based models, but also the new AI models that are coming out. And we're trying to get as many of them on there. We don't have all of them. We're working with some of the authors of some of the papers to get their models on there. But I think we have quite a large number of the most important or the most interesting models on there. And so it provides sort of a resource where you can go and see, hey, how good are these AI models compared to the traditional models? There's sort of an overview scorecard if you just want to see some colors and see how good the models are. But there are also interactive graphics to see, to really dive into if you want to know, interest in a particular metric or a particular region. You want to know, hey, like, I want to drill into this. So that's what WeatherBench is in essence.
And you've given a nice example from the perspective of the weather community. Are there other, and just let's leave meteorology for a moment. Are there other examples of benchmarking activities in other industries or in other sort of topical areas that our listeners or viewers might be familiar with?
Yeah. I mean, as I said, like, in just to come back to weather, like, benchmarking there wasn't called benchmarking traditionally, but, you know, like, weather centers have headline scores or whatever you want to call them, scorecards, and that's essentially the same. I think in, as I already mentioned, in machine learning, benchmarks have been absolutely instrumental. So sort of one of the breakthroughs of machine learning was when a machine learning model beat all of the other approaches on a benchmark called ImageNet. So that was like around 2016 or so, and that's a computer vision challenge. So we have to where you have to recognize objects and images, and that benchmark really showed that you got this like huge jump in performance from using machine learning, and that was kind of a pivotal moment in machine learning that like led to a much wider acceptance of machine learning. And there are similar benchmarks out there right now for all these large language models that are being developed. So in machine learning, this is a very established thing. And so, yeah, we kind of wanted to like get the report that to the weather community as well.
When I think about weather forecasting, one of the things we're often interested in, because they matter to the public and to the economy and infrastructure, transportation, is the extreme events mm-hmm. in the 1 to 2 week and out to 2 week time frame, hurricanes, flooding events, and so forth. Is there anything that you've learned or can say about predictability and skill mm-hmm. In these extreme events in the 1 to 2 week time frame?
Yeah, so first of all, extreme event evaluation is always difficult because extreme events are by nature rare. And so oftentimes right. you're lacking the statistical sample size to really say anything. Now, having said that, we have looked, we in WeatherBench, but also some of the other studies that came out recently have looked at the ability of these machine learning models to predict certain extremes like tropical cyclones, like heat waves. And almost surprisingly, these models, even though, you know, this is just the first generation of these machine learning based models, they do tend to perform reasonably well on these, sometimes even outperforming the traditional methods. So, for example, hurricane track accuracy is one example where on average, we're seeing that these machine learning models do perform better at predicting the hurricane track, or at least equally as well as the traditional models like the IFS or the GFS. Now, having said this, they don't perform well at predicting hurricane intensity, right? They tend to be 2 weeks. So,
well, all models struggle with intensity.
Well, machine learning models do have, at least the ones that are out right now, they do tend to struggle with getting the intensity of hurricanes right. They do tend to like blur out the forecast a little bit. So this is one of the things that is an active area of research right now, is how to make these models produce more physically realistic states, because a lot of these models tend to be a little bit blurry. But we have seen some papers that came out just in recent months that are going towards that direction. But for hurricane tracks, these models perform pretty well, and also for extreme heat, these models perform pretty well. Now, having said this, these are the events that we can statistically evaluate. Now, if you're thinking about a 1 in 100 year event, there's really no way we can, you know, statistically evaluate this. And so that's why I'm really excited now that these models are operational, right? You can go to, there are several websites now, but most notably on ECMWF's website, they run these AI models live. And so you can look at live events and gain experience, because I think that I'm all for statistical evaluation, obviously, but I think there's really no shortcut also to just gaining experience with these models for real-time weather. And I think that by gaining that experience, you know, we can see like how do these models perform for the really extreme events, for the events that we really, really care about. And so that'll be really interesting to see in the coming year or so.
And it's really interesting you talk about tracks or sort of heat waves, because these are sort of large synoptic scale. Many of those processes are driven by these sort of larger synoptic scale processes in terms of where the hurricane goes or positioning and lingering of a high pressure system. And so I could see why certainly perhaps some of the larger scale synoptic driven forcings would be better represented, whereas something like the internal mechanisms that lead to intensification or rapid intensification in a hurricane, as I mentioned, even our current mm-hmm. sort of models, we struggle with those internal mechanisms because we don't have observations right. and the grid spacing and so forth. So really fascinating to sort of see what are the next challenges as you continue there at Google. I'm talking with my colleague Stefan Rass, but what are sort of the next great challenges or opportunities with the WeatherBench activity?
Yeah, I think so. Like with WeatherBench or with the field in general, this is really very young, right? Like if we're talking about like a lot of these models that people are talking about, GraphCast, Pengu and so forth, they're a bit more than a year old. So this is really just the first generation. So I think that there are several steps that we want to go through as a community. So these first models were sort of deterministic models that provide a single sort of best guess of the forecast. But we know we're dealing with an uncertain system. So ideally, you know, we can't get the correct forecast. There's always some uncertainty. We should represent that uncertainty. And traditionally, this is done with ensemble models. But machine learning, there might be other opportunities to do this. But in any case, we have now seen just like some preprints coming out in the last few months of models, of machine learning models that can actually also produce an ensemble that's reliably calibrated. So I think that is... one of the next evolution. These models are still pretty coarse, so we need to work on improving, you know, the detail that they can deliver on small scales. And then the next thing that everyone's excited about is using raw observation data more efficiently. So all of these models right now are trained with reanalysis data. So reanalysis data set is essentially a model simulation that is kept close to observation. So it gives you a best guess of the three-dimensional state of the atmosphere at every point in time. And it's a continuous record for many decades. So it's the perfect training data set for machine learning. Like machine learning loves these very homogeneous data sets. But we know that these reanalysis data sets, they are just model simulations. They're not the actual ground truth. So we want to get closer to the ground truth by also training against surface stations, by training against radar. There are some small-scale models, like Google has developed a family of models called MetNet that so far been regional, and they actually look at these direct observations, and we want to do this globally as well. And so I think that is one of the next challenges, so that we can improve the information that people really care about, which is the weather on the ground. So I think that's sort of the trajectory that we're going through. And I think there's still a lot of improvement out there, right? Like, as I mentioned, this is pretty early days. The models that are out there right now, they definitely have flaws, but it's also always important to recognize that it's really just the first generation of these models. And there's still a lot of room for improvement out there as well.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm geeking out today with Dr. Stefan Rath with Google. And that's where I want to take my sort of last line of questioning. I think if you weren't familiar with WeatherBench 2.0 and this concept of benchmarking and weather accuracy, model accuracy, this episode was for you. And I think this is going to be a nice sort of resource, candidly, for many people, because this is such new and fertile ground, as you've alluded to. So the question I have, though, is the obvious one for me, given who you work for. Why Google? I mean, are the processes involved so complex and computer intensive that you've got to have significant horsepower? And is that why an organization like Google is in the mix on this?
It definitely requires a lot of resources to train these state-of-the-art models right now. And like, that's why you see places like Google, NVIDIA, you see Huawei from China, big tech labs, but also, you know, just big labs that have lots of resources. Those are the models that have really delivered the state-of-the-art. And it's just the scale of, you know, if you want to train high-resolution models, it is a little bit prohibitive if you don't have a large number of resources. So that doesn't mean, though, that innovation can't come out of academia. For example, there have been a number of papers that work at lower resolution, but that innovate on the methodology side and that show that, you know, like you can get improvements by using different methodologies. But yeah, certainly for the state-of-the-art models, it's a big effort. And why Google? I mean, weather actually is the number one unbranded search term on Google. So Google does care about weather. Like people that Google the weather, that's a big factor. And also, of course, weather is really important from a societal point of view, right? And so if you want to do good for society, that's kind of the first line of defense, for example, against extreme events, our weather forecast. And so that's, I think, that why Google is also really interested in that.
What's the end game for the benchmarking? I mean, there's sort of the standard federal, if you will, in the U.S. or sort of nationally based forecasting centers and operations. And then you have an emerging generation of private sector forecasting entities as well. How do you all play in the sandbox together?
I think that is a very, very good question, and I don't know if I have the answers for you. I think that we are, again, like we're just in the beginning of figuring it out, right? Like, I mean, we've had these research advances now coming out of you know, from colleagues of mine or from other big labs. But because they're so fresh, I mean, it's really early days in how do we actually apply this and how do we translate this into a particular use case? Then there are national weather services and they have to sort of figure out how are they going to deal with these developments. I think, you know, AI has shown to be that it can be a very useful tool for weather forecasting. And I mean, the end goal has to be to get this, you know, to get these advances, to translate those advances into something that, you know, gives better information for decision makers. And ECMWF, for example, they're investing heavily right now in their own AI modeling effort. NOAA is very interested. So it's really early days, and how all these, you know, small startups, big tech, the National Weather Services, academia, how all of those are going to play together, I don't know.
It's a loaded question.
I think it's going to be really exciting in the next few years as we figure this out. I'm very excited to see it. But it's an exciting and a really quickly evolving field.
So I'm the director of an atmosphere scientist program at a major university here in the U.S. And if a student of mine or someone else is listening to this and they're like, wow, this really sounds fascinating, and it really is cutting edge and at the beginning stages, what type of skill sets do future workforces in this part of our field need to have from your lens?
Yeah, I mean, so I think that, you know, I don't think AI is going to replace meteorologists or anything. I think meteorologists cover so many different areas, they're safe. I think it will be useful to have some familiarity of how these AI models work, just like a meteorologist now probably should be familiar with how traditional forecast models work, at least at a cursory level. So I think a little bit of basic machine learning education is really useful. There are also lots of great online resources out there where you can learn about the basics of machine learning. Even more so, I think, like, what I would like to see curricula shift to is more of an emphasis on handling large data. That is not, like, you might not work with machine learning, but it's pretty likely that if you're a meteorologist and you're going, you know, to do some research, or you're going to work in any sector, you're going to have to deal with large data sets, right? If you think about these huge weather forecasts or also climate data sets like CMAP, it's non-trivial to actually do analysis on that. And I struggle with that on a day-to-day basis. I know a lot of other people struggle with that on a day-to-day basis. And so I think that learning how to deal with large data sets, be it on the cloud or on an HPC cluster in a distributed fashion, that is a really, really valuable skill. And I'd love to see more of an emphasis in our curricula on that.
I certainly agree with you. And that's why we've really been standing up big data science initiatives here at our university, and certainly others as well. Where can people find you or more about the WeatherBench on social media or the web?
Yeah, so the starting place, probably you Google WeatherBench, and what you'll find is there's the GitHub repository, which has all the code and links to the data. And then there's also the official website where, you know, if you're just interested in seeing what the best model currently is, you can go there. For myself, I'm active on Twitter or X, so search for my name. I try to retweet or repost new advances and job postings in that area. So that's probably a good place to stay up to date too.
Yeah, we'll certainly be tagging you as this episode comes to light on our Weather Geeks Twitter or X site as well. By the way, be sure, if you're not following Weather Geeks on X or on Facebook or now Instagram as well, and Threads, feel free to follow us there. This has been such a fascinating discussion. Now, are there any other things before I let you go beyond sort of WeatherBench that you're working on from a research perspective, or is this your primary focus?
So my primary focus is on evaluation and helping the modeling teams. Within Google, we have a range of different models, right? Graphcast, the MetNet family of models, NeuralGCM, which is a hybrid physics AI model. And my focus is on helping those teams evaluate their model and getting the data processed and ready for machine learning and evaluation. And so I think that, you know, my focus is to develop the next great weather model. I think there's still a lot of room for improvements. And so, that's what we're working on generally.
been a fascinating discussion. This topic was made for weather geeks, and so I'm glad you were willing to come and geek out with us on the show today. Dr. Russ, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Dr. Marshall Shepherd from the University of Georgia, and this has been Weather Geeks. Again, be sure to follow us on all platforms and check us out on the Weather Channel streaming app as well, and the Weather Channel streaming channel, I should say. See you next time on Weather Geeks.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.